deprived. The Noble Quran, after a depiction in the previous ayahs of those who disbelieve, die in the state of sin without repentance, and thus make themselves deserving of divine punishment in the fire of hell, depicts in these ayahs the blissful state of the virtuous believers and the bounties and blessings reserved for them in paradise. The believers who were always conscious of God Almighty and during worldly life abstain from forbidden pleasures will be rewarded with gardens, springs, and many other means of comfort that are beyond our imagination. The God-weary or the Muttaqin are those who never take pride in their piety, worship, and awe of God Almighty, and never lose hope in divine mercy. The qualities of the Muttaqin, as described in these ayahs, reached perfection to the maximum degree in the exemplary life of the Prophet and his immaculate Ahlul Bayt. Therefore, all believers are commanded to follow in their footsteps, taking them as guides, and disregarding all others who have defective character and conduct. As ayahs 17 and 18 mean to say, the God-weary keep awake most of the night, sleeping a little and spending their time in the worship and remembrance of the all-merciful Lord, while in the morning, at the break of dawn, they plead the Almighty Creator for forgiveness for their own shortcomings, as well as the faults of their parents, relatives, friends, and acquaintances. The next ayah enumerates another noble attribute of the God-weary, pointing out that they share their wealth with the beggars, the destitute, and the deprived. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, abstinence from forbidden pleasures brings eternal bliss in the hereafter. Number two, the rewards of paradise are beyond our imagination. Number three, the God-weary are always conscious of the Almighty Creator, worship Him with sincerity, are never boastful of their good deeds, and follow the enlightened path of the Prophet and his blessed progeny, the Ahlul Bayt. Number four, another characteristic of the true believers is spending long hours of the night in supplications and remembrance of the all-merciful Lord, while invoking Him for forgiveness for themselves and for others at dawn. And number five, what is given to the needy and the deprived are their own rights, since God has decreed a share for them in the wealth of the rich, who should not consider charity as a favor. Now we invite you to listen to ayahs 20, 21, 22, and 23 of Surah Zariyat in conclusion of this week's episode of The Path Towards Enlightenment.
وَفِي الْأَرْضِ آيَاتٌ لِلْمُوقِنِينَ وَفِي أَنفُسِكُمْ أَفَلَا تُبْصِرُونَ وَفِي السَّمَاءِ رِزْقُكُمْ وَمَا تُوعَدُونَ فَوَرَبِّ السَّمَاءِ وَالْأَرْضِ إِنَّهُ لَحَقٌّ مِثْلَ مَا أَنَّكُمْ تَنْطِقُونَ
And in the earth are signs for those who have conviction. And in your souls as well, will you not then perceive? And in the sky is your provision and what you are promised. By the Lord of the sky and the earth, it is indeed the truth, just as it is a fact that you speak. These ayahs refer to the wonders of creation in the earth on which we live, in the sky by means of which our provision is guaranteed, and in our own selves as human beings, the best of God's creation blessed with the gifts of the intellect and speech. Many a secret lie in the earth, its distance from the sun, which make conditions ideal for life, its surface and its depth, such as mountains, valleys, and a variety of minerals, water sources, various kinds of birds, beasts, and insects, and last but not the least, vegetation that includes different fruits and vegetables, in addition to colorful flowers and their fragrance. These are indeed clear signs of divine omnipotence and wisdom for those who use their brains to acquire conviction. Ayah 21 is meant to jolt human conscience to perceive the omnipotence of the one and only Creator, with its emphasis on, in your souls, will you then not perceive? It means the different states of the body from conception to old age, including the physical senses, the nervous, respiratory, and digestive systems, as well as the sight, the hearing, and the defense mechanism, all of which serve as manifestations of divine wisdom that is reflected in the various instincts of the human beings and their needs. Thus, by contemplating on our own physical and spiritual aspects, including the gender differences and their attachment to each other, as well as the mental faculties, our mind understands the mysteries of the natural forces and discovers new methods for advancement in knowledge and its application. These wonders should make us become better cognizant of God Almighty, the day of resurrection for the final judgment, and the rewards and punishment it entails. A famous statement from the Prophet of Islam says, "One who knows his own self indeed recognizes his Lord." Ayah 22 means to say that our provision and what has been promised descends upon the earth from the sky through rain, snow, and sunlight, all of which make vegetation grow in order to feed us. This is another sign of divine mercy. Ayah 23 is a divine oath on the sky and earth that whatever the Noble Quran says is indeed the undeniable truth, as clear as your power of speech. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, the Quran draws our attention to the wonders that the earth contains in order to help us recognize the one and only Creator. Since the more we discover this phenomena, the better our realization of the resurrection day. Number two, proper reflection on our own self enables us to have better cognition of God. Number three, the sky showers the earth with rain and sunlight, which along with the wind helps the growth of vegetation to provide food for mankind and all creatures. And number four, the power of speech along with the intellect is among the divine blessings. Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Leaving Sin. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of leaving sin. Now, this is very important that when we talk about the Islamic lifestyle, in our lifestyle, sin should not have any part in our lifestyle. We should leave it. It should not be the part of our life, because this is a sin that stops us from getting to perfection. Whereas the Islamic lifestyle and Islam has come to take us towards the perfection. Now, one of the biggest hurdles is sin itself. When we see a sin, it stops us from getting to perfection. It stops us from going to the right path. And it stops us from feeding the best thing to our soul, because obviously we have two things. We have a soul and a body. For the body, we have subsistence like, you know, fruits, food, and drinks. These are the things that we give to our body, and this body gets strengthened with this. Whereas on the other side, if I talk about the body first, so these are the foods that we give. On the for the body, there are some things which are not beneficial, basically. And that is, for example, if someone just eats junk food, if a person do not eat properly on time, if he's not eating on time, these are the things that are harmful for his body. Maybe he's eating too fat, and that is also harmful for his body. So we need to be very much careful. When we are very much careful about our body, similarly, we need to be careful about our soul. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the leaving the sins, and we talked about the body. We gave the example of body, that the way we give food to the body, there are something which are beneficial for the body, which help this body to gain or to have the growth, and there are some things which are harmful for the body, which we do not give, or we do not eat or drink such things. Similarly, we have a soul. This soul also needs some sustenance. There are many things that are harmful for the soul, and there are many things that are beneficial for the soul. There are the things that helps the soul to grow quickly and to reach to perfection, and there are many things that stop the soul from getting the perfection, and it is definitely harmful for the soul. Now, the things that are harmful for the soul, one of those things is sin itself. When a person commits a sin, the soul gets angry. Obviously, it weakens the soul. It brings a black dot on the heart of a person. Whereas if a person is performing good deeds, he never goes towards the sin, that person obviously achieves the perfection sooner. And we have many, many supplications in which we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us. Even at the last sajda or the prostrate that we do, we say, ظَلَمْتُ نَفْسِي, I have done ظُلْم, unjust, I was unjust towards myself. فَغْفِرْلِي, O Allah, forgive me. Why I was unjust? It was because of the sin that I committed. So the sin itself is injustice. The sin itself is oppression against my body and my soul. The sin itself is oppression. So we need to get rid of these sins, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
The 8-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
It happened in the year of the revolution. The U.S. embassy takeover was humiliation enough, and America deployed ships to the Persian Gulf. Shortly after, Imam Khomeini, leader of the revolution, called for the formation of the Basij, an auxiliary force, on November 26, 1979. And the anniversary of the formation of the Basij each year marks Basij Week. The Basij is a people's force, meaning a force for the people, made up of a good portion of the population, to be mobilized in wartime and engage in developmental activities in peacetime. Now, how much that entity has actually done and what keeps it true to its cause we'll be attempting in this episode. So stay with me, Leila Faramaizi, on Iran Today. As a subsidiary of the IRGC, or Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, the Basij is often forgotten to be a force from the people. Although the IRGC, or SEPA, also basically came from the same stock, that's deprived walks of life. The Basij has six major groupings. I got to talk to two, one of them being the Student Basij. Mr. Mofrad is head of the Student's Basij, although members consider it egalitarian more than rigidly hierarchical. He gave us an interview in his office in what was the Americans' only section of what was once the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, now known as the Den of Espionage.
The identity of the Basij, which is to mobilize, prepare, and equip the people to expand their participation in their country's development, has been preserved all these years. That is, if the organization loses the identity or mission, it will lose its basic function. However, the issues people have been involved in over the past 4 years have depended on what was needed at the time. For example, there has been a need for military participation in the country at some point, and so the general manifestation of Basij was on the battlefields. At another point, when the country needed reconstruction and similar services, the people further contributed to the development of deprived villages and areas.
The students, who are unpaid volunteers, priding themselves for generating their own ideas to mobilize authorities, didn't appear to feel like anyone's subsidiary. They said it didn't matter who was in power giving orders, long as it was to serve the country and ultimately steer it towards the fulfillment of Islamic rulership and the salvation of all.
We set up a large vaccination center here at the former U.S. Embassy. The representatives from the health ministry have praised the center as one of the cleanest, most stylish and effective vaccination centers in the country that provides services round the clock. And a significant number of people came into the perimeter of the former U.S. Embassy and received services here. We believe perhaps the greatest death to America is serving the people.
Over a year since the formation of the force on April the 30th, 1980, a bill was approved to form the National Basij Organization. By way of the bill, the Basij is tasked with preventing and countering any foreign military aggression and natural disasters, concrete threats. It's also tasked with countering political, economic, and cultural threats. After the eight-year Iraq-Iran War of the 1980s, the force grew bigger and its activities expanded. Probably the number of Basijis who serve at military organizations are just a fraction of those Basijis doing non-military jobs in universities, workshops, villages, cities, and Islamic seminaries, as well as among nomads and people from various social backgrounds. But first, how the force participated in wartime operations. Mr. Hashemzadeh is the student's Basij demands deputy, meaning he's responsible for voicing expectations of and to the government where it seems to be going astray.
As an ideology and culture, Basij's concern is to preserve the cultural, economic, social, and territorial integrity of the country. There are issues over which opinions are divided, including ethnic and religious matters. Normally, people with diverse religious, dialectical, cultural, and ethnic backgrounds are living in peace and have no problems with each other. But there can be some instances that differences arise between them and divisions are created, the source of which is known to us all. Basij enters the scene to overcome the division using the capacities of the same communities.
We visited Basij headquarters downtown Tehran to hear the construction or development Basij chief, Sardar or General Zahrai, reminisce.
We continue to adopt the model we used during the 8-year-long in post-war with Iraq. A volunteer would go to the front lines and was assigned to a division either in support, the militia, or the engineering battalion. When you volunteer for a job, you'll be a part of an orderly system. Basij will create that order. Basij showcases his work in the form of providing services. But it has another facet to it, people's combat readiness.
I said the role of the Basij expanded after the war. Well, today it has set course to help in eliminating poverty and materializing the goal of a resistance economy. So I asked of the criteria deciding the poverty line and eligibility for donations in cash or kind.
There's a movement ordered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution called Contribution of the Faithful, which started after the coronavirus pandemic hit, identifying families in need who have been affected by the pandemic, for example, those who've lost their jobs, is the main objective. 1.6 million households were identified. We tried to provide them with relief packages. We also took steps to release prisoners convicted of unintentional crimes. We distributed bags, shoes and tablets, and even helped pay for dowries.
It was on May the 7th, 2000, that the leader issued a directive to establish the development Basij, to encourage the youth to participate in developing agriculture and natural resources in villages and deprived areas. It would result in labor productivity and strengthening job opportunities, among other things. The blow to some natural resources, however, is not going to be easy to compensate, nor can it have helped agriculture. But earnest Basiji youth put in all their effort, all the same. Oh, but natural disaster. That cause of sudden death and destruction, loss and poverty, is a thing this country is nothing short of. A mini-continent of every kind of beauty, Iran has seen enough floods and earthquakes over the past few decades to make up for every blessing it enjoys. And it's at such times that a million-strong force, over 10 million-strong force that mobilizes the locals as well, comes as a welcome relief. On November the 12th, 2017, an earthquake measuring 7.3 on the Richter scale hit Sarpol-e-Zahab in the western province of Kermanshah, shaking it down to its foundation. Some 90,000 houses were partially or completely damaged by the quake, which took over 660 lives and left more than 10,000 injured. In the early days, when people needed shelters, young jihadi groups collected public donations and distributed essential items to the people, and set up shelters in the area to speed up their work and reduce the cost of building shelters. I did ask, however, whether authorities followed up on the effort to have built up or helped build up houses by now for the afflicted.
One example is that we built 2,200 units in Saripol Zahab in cooperation with the government and the Housing Foundation. We did not manage the projects, we were merely helping by bringing in volunteers. We built 230 units in Sisacht. We're currently working on 250 units in Andika and Bozov. We're also making 600 temporary housing units there. We're doing joint work in Hormozgan. Specialized Basij members provide additional service works, including counseling, generating estimates related to agriculture and the resistive economy, mobilizing Basij women community, as well as artists and athletes to cheer people up. Or mobilizing the medical community and dispatching medical teams to different areas.
Not long after Kermanshah, the whole country was swept over. Heavy rainfall in 2019 led to flooding in 28 out of Iran's 31 provinces. It affected over 42 million inhabitants in 253 cities and caused widespread damage to municipal facilities, including health centers and hospitals. In the first hours, under 2,500 jihadi groups went to Khuzestan, about 1,500 groups went to the northern provinces, and 2,000 forces were sent to Lorestan province. That's west to south.
I've recently visited Hormozgan province, and I have seen that Basij has estimated the needed facilities and mobilized all the people and state's facilities to solve the problems. For example, in the city of Fin in Hormozgan, we needed to know how many villages are in the area and how much damage they have sustained. We generated very accurate data, which can be used both by the people or the government.
Imam Khomeini would have had the total number of Basij forces doubled. He said, "Teach the youth that any land must take but a few years to turn into a country with 20 million youngsters ready to take up arms. It must have a 20 million strong army. Such a country would be invulnerable." The country's seen no end to incidents, which is why I wondered if the flooding was a lesson to go for prevention rather than cure. Because a major factor in rain turning to flood was that the dams were not cleaned. Are authorities studying the country for possible calamity in future, and are they taking action to prevent that calamity?
Frankly, we've been a little weak when it comes to prevention. As the crisis unfolds, people's empathy usually helps cover the gaps. People do wonders. Whenever a disaster strikes, people will help regardless of the financial difficulties. The contributions mask our weak responses. This is considered part of the work too. Revolutionary institutions and people bear part of the burden.
A more recent incident occurred in the southern province of Hormozgan, meaning two earthquakes of a magnitude of over 6 on the Richter scale, 14th November.
In the case of the earthquake in Hormozgan, we responded by creating bases. Immediately after an incident occurs, we'll set up the bases considering the area that's been affected. For instance, we put up a national base in Saripol Zahab because the damage was severe and we needed help from all provinces. But we responded to the crisis in Sisacht by creating a local base. In the floods of 2019, regional bases were involved.
A creepier calamity has been the one that swept the world since 2019. That would be, yes, COVID-19. As with polio, the Basij took on a vaccination feat. The vaccination process did not meet standards in all centers, which is why I asked how the Basij or Basij-mobilized individuals would have been meeting required criteria, such as checking vaccine subjects for fever.
Basij assumed the duty of helping solve this problem. It made different moves, including attending hospitals, performing bureau rides, things that people were afraid to do in the beginning. We saw the medical potential of our specialized members, so we sent them to help in the health and medical sector. They helped with vaccinations. A very large vaccination center was established in this complex we are at, the former U.S. Embassy.
short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
More to be said on the matter, but first a quick media review to see what other outlets have to say. And which outlets will we be picking at today? IRNA, the national news agency, quotes Iran's military chief, as do other outlets. That would be Major General Barghadi, calling for acquiring greater offensive capabilities by drawing on scientific capabilities of Basiji and non-Basiji scientists. Iran has felt threatened for the past 40 years and more, and that feeling materialized physically, say, since 2007, when generally Israeli attacks assassinated nuclear scientists and nuclear facilities. Now, what did Barghadi say exactly? Boosting ability to target threat centers, a strategic policy, runs the headline. He outlined science and technology are one of the main drivers and engine of progress. Workers of the field of the industry have considered the increase of deterrence in the field of defense and military as the forefront of their strategies, as the guarantor of strengthening Islamic Iran. Mehr News reads, tactical exercise of Basij's Fatahin special unit kicks off. Now, what is deterrence military might if no one knows of it to keep off? Tactical exercises can be the answer. They can in themselves be deterrent, just as they are practice for the forces to keep agile and their morale boosted. The Fatahin or conquerors will be holding the three-day exercise with 1,000 special personnel present, and part of the exercise will be ambush and counter-ambush techniques and shooting with specialized weapons in practicing operations against terrorist groups and Takfiri groups. Tehran Times quotes the leader, enemies after destroying, nullifying Basij. Well, if there are enemies, numerous enemies after Iran, surely they'll be most wary of their enemy at the front. That's the forces, namely the ready to jump on a mine forces, the Basij. What Ayatollah Khamenei called a God-given reserve and manifestation of national power. In defending the country and its independence and stability in providing vital services on a national scale, in leading scientific activities and new technologies and valued approaches and creating a spiritual atmosphere, it is the name of Basij that comes up and the presence of Basij that draws attention, the leader wrote. And he called on Basiji forces to further concentrate on thwarting the enemy's plots, naturally. That'll be it for the news segment. Do stay tuned. War, be it waged by another country or another life form, unites. So with an outbreak such as the corona pandemic, a less friendly Basiji presence in cities in the earlier years of the revolution has partly been forgotten to the forces' services with the pandemic and likes. In fact, 50% of the corona vaccination process nationwide since it got underway has been up to the Basij. That organization joined forces with the health ministry by agreement. The agreement enforced longer working hours for both entities to double vaccine administering, as reported on September the 13th.
When the pandemic started, there weren't enough goods available, such as masks and other personal protective equipment, to cover people's demands. So Basij started producing them. Then they helped the medical staff in hospitals, and recently they contributed to the vaccination program. and we are witnessing the extent of their contribution. When the government, meaning the governmental institutions and executive bodies, are unable to work on their own, people provide assistance to fulfill their needs. That's what the siege is all about.
While we are on the topic of disease and vaccines, in the 1990s, polio was this country's nightmare. More than 9 million children under the age of 5 would have to be vaccinated to eradicate the disease. Would have taken the healthcare system alone time. But within just 24 hours, 8.5 million children across the country were vaccinated against polio with the participation of Basij forces through a door-to-door vaccination campaign. Thing is, they rally the people to help where their own numbers fall short.
Basij is like a university that trains people with specific capabilities and skills scientifically and religiously, which enables them to work in different fields and play an effective role based on what's needed at the time. We need to take that into account too. For example, when an earthquake strikes, people are grappling with its consequences. As you know, the capabilities of the people, NGOs and grassroots organizations have always been greater than those of the government.
Since the autumn of 2008, the Basij has had a considerable presence in cyberspace. The first step was the launch of 10,000 blogs from 10,000 Basij bases to provide the internet with virtuous content. The second phase took place in 2009 with the establishment of the Cyber Council of the Basij. How the council went about things was it began training warriors for cyber warfare. By 2017, there were 18,000 people in the task force that monitored and reported on news stories and recent online activity, especially any activities by the opposition. That's according to the deputy of Iran's chief prosecutor, Abdusamad Khorramabadi. Deputy prosecutor of that time, that is.
There is a wide range in that regard. The Basij organization assigns the roles and dispatches the volunteers. For example, when we set up a vaccination center, put medical students at the front line where people need to be treated. In terms of other services, however, including those related to organizing the patients and so on, we use graduates of other fields of study that may not require special expertise in those areas. We have a special capacities. The student Basij centers have created good research facilities in universities across the country.
Back to our focus. The Basij has several branches. There are three main armed wings. That's the Ashura and Al-Zahra brigades that are the security and military branch tasked with defending the neighborhoods in case of emergencies, the Imam Hussein brigades, and the Imam Ali brigades. The force also has multiple branches with specialized functions, meaning civilian functions. They include the development or Sazandegi Basij, Basij of the Guilds, Basij of the Nomads, and the Student Basij. Members can be men or women, young or old, and they are grouped as three types. Regular forces, those are the unpaid volunteers who receive perks such as university spots, active members, and special members. With 54,000 bases across the country, Basij is probably the biggest cultural, social, and military popular network in the world.
One mistake people often make in defining Basij is coupling it with the Basij organization. It's an organization that's helping out and assuming the role of a national player. But Basij is made of patriotic people who are ready to do something for their country. Their thoughts and views may be different, but they are concerned for the country and are hopeful for its future, so they want to do something about it. That describes Basij. As late Imam Khomeini and the leader of the Islamic Revolution have put it, they can look like me or have another appearance, but they are compassionate either way.
It's a group of people happy to show up and put all their talents to use wherever there's room to serve a holy cause. Sacrifice is at the core. The given definition of a Basiji concludes, faith originates from the heart of Basijis and makes them work hard. Similarly, insight tells them how to proceed, how to identify the criteria, and how to tread the path. The Basij's budget is modest. Our Basij chief explained how the force had remained true to its cause, however.
There are several groups and institutions that collect donations. One is the Red Crescent, and the other is the Imam Khomeini Relief Committee, which collects aid for the deprived. Basij has also collected donations in some instances, but not all, including in the aftermath of the 2019 floods. But we have collected goods for Hormozgan. When we're collecting financial aid, we deposit the sums in a joint account that all cities have so that the government, the Friday prayer leader, the representatives of the leader of the Islamic Revolution in different cities, and the IRGC know about it. As you know, Basij has the largest capillary network in the country. There are 54,000 Basij centers across the country.
What the Basij, or originally underprivileged mobilized resistance forces, identifies with in essence is the word resistance, which has also inspired the resistance front of more recent times in standing up to the hostility of domineering powers. Interestingly, when Chief of the Pakistani Army, Lieutenant General Qamar Javed Bajwa, visited Tehran in 2017, he said that Pakistan is interested in learning from Iran's experience of creating the Basij organization and using popular forces to counter enemy threats.
Neighboring countries, including Iraq and Syria, have been able to make similar moves. They have been able to surmount problems where they created popular groups alongside their armies. When Imam Khomeini ordered the formation of a student Basij in 1979, they recommended that the resistance nuclei be formed across the Islamic world. We have seen them in action in recent years. When it comes to defending the holy shrines in Syria, for example, the people of Syria and other countries helped solve the crisis. If it wasn't for the people, the armies wouldn't be able to pull that off.
And that's all there's room for here and now. But surely there'll be plenty more to present when or if the next natural disaster occurs to call for aid. Hopefully not by next week. But do join us then at the same time. Bye for now.
In the limelight.
For years, German Muslim women have been fighting against systematic attempts by government to dictate what they can and cannot wear in public and in the workplace. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Hebe Jamal, journalist. And this article is published under the heading Islamophobia in Germany. I am not even seen as a person. Stay tuned for more. During the recent German election, polling station assistants in the western town of Bergheim initially refused to allow a 21-year-old Muslim woman wearing hijab and a protective mask to cast her ballot. According to reports, the poll workers cited a ban on face coverings for not allowing her to vote, saying voters must be identifiable. The woman was eventually allowed to vote after complaining to city officials, as this was a clear violation of her rights and a blatant display of Islamophobia. In light of this incident, many are now wondering whether other Muslim women were turned away at polling sites, and more broadly, how pervasive is gendered Islamophobia within German society. For years, German Muslim women have been fighting against systematic attempts by government to dictate what they can and cannot wear in public and in the workplace. This past July, the European Union's highest court ruled that businesses can ban employees from wearing religious clothing or symbols, including headscarves, under the premise of presenting neutrality. The case was launched by two German Muslim women suspended by their employers for wearing the headscarf. The hyper-politicization of Muslim female identity, where political personalities and the media debate their right to careers and social inclusion, overflows into direct anti-Muslim racism within their everyday lives. Muslim girls at school experience discrimination frequently. Rabia, a 16-year-old German Muslim girl, told Middle East Eye, "I experience anti-Muslim racism so often that sometimes I don't even realize it. I have a school teacher that reduces me to my headscarf, insisting that my parents force me to wear it, even though I explained to him several times that this is not the case. In school, I am not even seen as a person. They don't bother to learn my name. Teachers address me with Fatima only because there is another Muslim girl in my class with that name. My name is Rabia. My name should be remembered." Another young Muslim woman, 19-year-old Nazanin, told Middle East Eye, "In ninth grade, on a school trip, a German woman threw a bottle at me and started yelling racial slurs. I was only 14. My teachers did nothing to stop her. Although I graduated now, the racism has only gotten worse." Within Germany's public school systems, data has shown an alarming amount of discrimination against young Muslim students, specifically girls, leading to a climate of low expectations and discouragement. A survey found that German teachers were more likely to recommend non-ethnic German children to lower school forms than ethnic German pupils, shaping their career and higher educational paths. Ahlam, 19, told Middle East Eye, "My grades suffered because my educator made me believe my upbringing made me a slow thinker. By nature, I stuttered. So, he made me feel ashamed for participating in class. My grades only got worse." The anti-Muslim discrimination that women feel in public institutions is reflective of Germany's general attitude towards the hijab. As a visible marker of Muslim identity, it is seen as antithetical to German culture and society. The decision to wear the hijab and to become visibly Muslim changes the status of Muslim women, making them automatically othered. A number of Muslim women, ranging from children to adults, told Middle East Eye that they constantly encounter Islamophobia due to their decision to look visibly Muslim. Sima, 17-year-old, said, "I was walking home one day when a man held his umbrella like a gun to my face. He imitated a gun going off, then called me a terrorist while he and his friend laughed. I couldn't defend myself, I just kept walking." Bushra, 21, was out shopping when another female customer accused her of shoplifting. "I was forced to take off my hijab to prove I wasn't hiding anything under there," she told Middle East Eye, adding, "I was asked what my nationality is, even though I held my German ID card in my hand. When the police let me leave, I only wanted to ask the lady who accused me why." Latifa, 25, recalled, "I applied in a supermarket as they were urgently looking for temporary workers at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. I was told I could not work there with the hijab because the supermarket was neutral." On the first day of an internship, 21-year-old Iman said she was told to remove her hijab or otherwise I will end up as a cleaning lady. "I wasn't able to continue the internship because of my decision to follow my religion." Similarly, 28-year-old Shazia said she was denied a position as a nursery teacher. "I was told white Germans will not feel comfortable sending their kids to a nursery with someone that is dressed the way I am," unquote. In a study published by the Institute for the Study of Labor in Bonn, 1,500 identical CVs were sent to German firms, except some used the name Miriam Osterk and others Sandra Bohr. In 18.8% of cases, Bohr was invited for an interview, while Osterk was invited in just 13.5% of cases. When the photo of Osterk showed her in a headscarf, she was invited in just 4.2% of cases. Researchers noted that these results suggest that a woman who wears a headscarf would have to send 4.5 times as many applications to receive the same number of callbacks as an applicant with a German-sounding name. Germany and other Western countries hold stark prejudices about how Muslim women are treated within their culture and religion. A common stereotype is that Muslim women from migrant backgrounds are less likely to enter the job market because of cultural differences, such as being housewives and raising children. It is not considered, however, that it is much harder for Muslim women to integrate into the job market because of discriminatory practices, such as those upheld by German neutrality laws. Such discrimination can discourage women from participating in the labor market and even from attaining an education. Some young Muslim women choose careers based not just on interest but also on the potential obstacles they may have to overcome because of their hijab. Maryam told Middle East Eye, "I haven't entered the job market yet, but I have to constantly change my preferences because of discrimination in the workplace." At the same time, 25-year-old Medina said she avoids some jobs together. "I consciously do not apply anywhere where I have direct customer contact to avoid the obstacles of neutrality," she said. A Muslim woman is thus not judged by her qualifications, but by whether she is German enough to work. Zalal, 27, told Middle East Eye that whenever she applies for a job and gets an interview, her qualifications receive maybe 5 minutes of conversation, while her headscarf sparks 15 minutes of discussion. "Most Muslim women in Germany just want to be treated equitably. As Sophie, 29, put it, life in this society is hard, stressful, and psychologically painful. At the same time, I'm grateful for parts of society that react more openly and do not see and treat you like a second-class person just because you are visibly Muslim."
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful,
Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Please stay tuned. Allah in the Holy Quran, Surah Az-Zumar, Ayahs 17 and 18, states, So give good news to my servants who listen to the word of Allah and follow the best sense of it. From these ayahs, we do not mean to listen to or follow anything you like. It means to refer to the good materials and select the best from among them. It also means to refer to the best practitioners of Islam, namely the infallibles. Allama Tabatabai, in his exegesis under these two ayahs of the Noble Quran, believes that the good news is not given to the public or any ordinary man and woman. The main recipients of the good news of Allah are the experts who organize the significance of the content they read or write. In the Battle of Camel, a person came to Imam Ali alayhi salam and asked him, Who is right and who is wrong? I can't distinguish between the two. On both fronts, I see the Muslims who pray, recite the Quran, and are among the companions or relatives of the Prophet. This is the time when someone has to refer to an expert like Imam Ali alayhi salam to get the right answer to his doubts. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care.
IRIB English Radio.